This is your Action News reporter with all the news that is news across the nation. On the scene at the supermarket, there seems to have been some disturbance here. Pardon me, sir. Did you see what happened?
Yeah, I did. I was just standing over by the tomatoes and cherry cut, running through the polo windows, through the fruits and veggies, naked as a jaybird. Ethan's over there, jams, jellies, preserves, and pancakes. I hollered over there. I said, "Don't look, Ethan!" She dropped a whole jar of kumquats and fell back into the sweet veggie side. Heaven's too late. She dumped in the end sinks.
Here
it
goes.
So, some of you may remember that in the 1970s there was this really odd fad that was around for a while called streaking. It involved people, one or two people, running through some public event, naked as a jaybird, nothing on but a smile. Years later, the TV show Seinfeld reminded us of that 1970s fad. George Costanza, working for the New York Yankees at the time, wanted to get fired from his job, so he decided to streak a Yankees game. But George was a little self-conscious, so instead of actually streaking, he wore a bodysuit. And in the show, he becomes known as Bodysuit Man. He fails at getting fired from the New York Yankees. By the way, the phrase naked as a jaybird is a little mysterious. Apparently, in the 19th century, the phrase was naked as a robin. But people are still kind of confused about that because neither robins nor jaybirds lose their feathers. There is a theory, though, about the phrase naked as a jaybird. Apparently in the 1920s and 1930s at American prisons, when prisoners were brought to the prison, they got off the bus, they had to go to one place where they left their clothes and then walk, apparently without anything on, across the yard to the showers. Jaybirds could be a word for jailbirds, short for jaybirds. That could be the origin of that phrase. There is your Jeopardy moment for today. But whatever the origin of the phrase naked as a jaybird, for most of us, it is a pretty uncomfortable idea. Streaking wasn't a very long-lived fad, and thankfully, unlike other things which make a return, this one hasn't. Recently, I had a friend tell me that she booked a vacation hotel for her husband. She and her husband, they're going to Florida in a little bit. And she said there was just something about the place that kind of gnawed at her. And so the next day after she'd made this reservation, she went online again, did a little more research, and found out that she'd made a reservation at a clothing optional resort. She quickly changed that reservation to a place where clothing is required, at least outside of your room. Just wasn't comfortable with that. In very, very early on in the Bible, second chapter of Genesis, we read these words, "And the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed." And I think that's about the last time in human history where people weren't uncomfortable about their unclad bodies. But I don't want to focus this morning, contrary to everything that's gone on thus far, on nudity, but on something called naked spirituality. Brian McLaren, who is a fairly well-known author, a former pastor, penned a book a few years ago called Naked Spirituality. And early in the book, he quotes another spiritual author named Richard Rohr. Some of you have read Richard Rohr's book, and we used a phrase from it in the call to worship. "The goal of all spirituality is to lead the naked person to stand trustfully before the naked God. The important thing is that we're naked. In other words, that we come without title, merit, shame, or even demerit. All we can offer to God is who we really are, which to all of us never seems like enough." And among the things McLaren writes about in his book is something that's attributed to Mother Teresa. He doesn't know if it's a factual story about Mother Teresa, but he tells the story anyway. Apparently, Mother Teresa was once asked by a reporter what she said when she prayed to God. Mother Teresa replied, "Mostly, I just listen." And the reporter asked a follow-up question, "Well, what does God say to you?" And Mother Teresa said, "Mostly, God just listens." McLaren goes on to comment, "Could it be that the loving, attentive, mutual listening of the soul and the spirit constitute the greatest expression of spirituality?" I think that's what Brian McLaren was trying to get at with this phrase, naked spirituality, that unpretentious moment of the person and God coming together. And that kind of spirituality has deep roots in the Bible. Now, in the gospel reading today, no one is actually naked. But in fact, in the first part of the story, the scribes are exactly the opposite. They're layered. They're wearing long robes. They walk around in them. They like the honor and prestige their position gives them. But they're not only clothed with long robes, they're clothed in their hearts and souls with a lot of pretension. They don't seem to be able to be honest with themselves. And underneath it all, they're engaged in behavior that's destructive. In one translation, it says they devour widows' houses. These folks have wrapped layer upon layer around themselves. Well, their souls are dying. And if they could be honest with God, they could see that they are not spiritually healthy, but spiritually emaciated. Contrast that with the widow Jesus notices in the next scene. Jesus is watching as the crowds come to the temple, putting large sums, some of them, into the temple treasury. Many wealthy come with their gifts. It's impressive. People would be paying attention to that. And perhaps some of those folks, like the scribes, like the fact that people are paying attention to them as they give. Perhaps some are getting caught up in it. But Jesus also notices someone else. Someone that maybe no one else would be paying attention to. A virtual nobody in the society of the time. A widow. And almost by definition in Jesus' day, widows were poor. Not all of them. Jesus mentions that this one is. In the society of Jesus' times, widows had very little economic opportunity. They couldn't own property. Their options were very limited. But Jesus notices her. Notices her gift, two small coins, the coins of the least value in the realm. And in that strange kind of math that Jesus sometimes engages in, he says she's put in more than everyone else. All of them, he says, have contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has given all she had to live on. The phrase really is about giving all that she is, all that she has, from the very depths of her being. Jesus is pretty good at puzzling us. The text really isn't, at its heart, about giving away all our possessions, about emptying our pockets, our wallets, our bank accounts into the offering plate. However, if any of you feel so moved this morning, we wouldn't say no. But the text really has to do with generosity of heart and soul and spirit, generosity in the widest sense. It has to do with naked spirituality. It's about opening ourselves without layers, without pretension to God. It's allowing ourselves to be vulnerable. It's about trusting. It's about trusting that as we open all of who we are to God, we will find life at its best. When we are open and vulnerable, our hearts grow, and it is giving of ourselves from our generous hearts, whether that's time, attention, resources, whatever, that's what matters most. Developing those kind of big hearts out of which we give to others. Now, we can't leave this text this morning without noting some irony. Jesus has called out the scribes for being pretentious, for being spiritually layered, for not being open and vulnerable. And one evidence of that is that they mistreat the poor, those on the margins. They devour widows' houses. And quick cut to the next scene, who is at the heart of it? a widow who lives on the margins. And who does her gift help support? The scribes. Jesus seems both to be noticing the widow for her naked spirituality, her openness, her vulnerability, her trust. But I think he's also cautioning us that sometimes that openness and vulnerability and trust can be manipulated. Perhaps naked spirituality requires both big hearts and keen minds. To use another phrase of Jesus, to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. And naked spirituality can also be found in the story that Jeff read from the book of Ruth. Now, to be honest, in that story, there is also a little bit of literal nakedness, but we're not going to talk much about that. It really is also a story about naked spirituality, openness, vulnerability, trust. It's helpful to recall a little bit of that whole story of Ruth. Ruth is not one of the in people. She's not an Israelite. She is a foreigner. What has happened is Naomi and her two sons have gone to a different land during a famine. Her sons take foreign wives. Naomi's husband dies. Both her sons die. And she's left with these two foreign daughter-in-laws. And Ruth hangs with Naomi, says that she will be there with her in thick and thin. Naomi is also concerned for Ruth, and one of the ways that you gain some economic security is you married well in that time. And Naomi has a well-to-do relative named Boaz. And the story we read today, which is frankly a little bit spicy, at least in the third chapter, has to do with how Ruth and Boaz become coupled. But the entire story is one about openness and vulnerability and trust. And the end is blessing. Boaz marries Ruth. They have a son named Obed, who is the father of Jesse, who is the father of David, who becomes the best known and best loved king of Israel. And the irony in this story is, in David's line is this woman, Ruth, who's not even one of us. Vulnerable, poor, but her openness to God leads to good things. Naked spirituality, openness, honesty, vulnerability, trust, a widow giving deeply of herself, another widow refusing to abandon her mother-in-law but instead staying with her, people on the margins trusting their lives that they matter to God. I think that's the kind of spirituality to which we're invited by God and Jesus Christ. And I think this naked spirituality has two dimensions that I want to identify very quickly as I come to a conclusion this morning. The first dimension is this. Naked spirituality is about being open and honest and vulnerable and trusting in God. In his book, Brian McLaren quotes another person who talks about true religion in these terms. True religion helps us to grow, but pseudo-religion hinders growth, for it creates and maintains obstacles and barriers. Thus it is that much religion merely censors experience and does not liberate it, stifles human potential and does not allow it to blossom. Much religion is superficial and does not help the journey inwards, which is necessary to spiritual health. There has to be a movement toward the still center, the depths of our being, where according to the mystics we find the presence of God. To grow as human persons, to grow in our relationship with God, requires that we do inner work, that we're open and honest and vulnerable and willing to look inside. We need to deal with the shame and guilt we might carry. We need to be honest with ourselves and God about our thoughts and our feelings, about our questions and quandaries and doubts. We need to be honest with ourselves and with God about our wounds and our scars. We open all of our life to God, becoming vulnerable to God's loving and caring spirit, and we trust that as we engage in that sometimes difficult work, we grow. Our hearts grow. Our minds grow. And the second dimension of naked spirituality is openness and vulnerability to others, trusting that God will strengthen us to do justice and engage in compassionate action. Kathleen Norris is a fairly well-known spiritual writer. She wrote a book a number of years ago called Dakota. She also wrote a book called Amazing Grace, and in it she reflects on some religious words. And I love her reflection on the word righteous. And I want to share it with you. The word righteous used to grate on my ear, Kathleen Norris said, guessing that's not an unknown experience to some of us. For years, I was able to hear it only in its negative mode, as self-righteous, as judgmental. Sounds a little bit like Jesus describing the scribes. Gradually, as I became more acquainted with the word in its biblical context, I found that it does not mean self-righteous at all, but righteous in the sight of God. And this righteousness is consistently defined by the prophets and in the Psalms and Gospels as a willingness to care for the most vulnerable people in a culture, characterized in ancient Israel as orphans, widows, resident aliens, and the poor. Naked spirituality is both about moving deeply inward, looking at our lives, trusting God's love for us, for all of us, and it is about moving outward in compassion and care. It's about knowing God's love and about knowing ourselves as loved by God. And it's about showing God's love in compassionate action in the world. Streaking, thankfully, was a really short-lived phenomenon. Naked spirituality, however, is always in season. Amen.